let you. And today is Monday, November 9th. Many of us are challenged with our calendars these days, so just that's what time it is. And this is the first regularly scheduled meeting of the Ashland Senior Advisory Committee since March 9th. So welcome to everybody for being here from the ASAC members and to our guest Rob and Jackie, who are long-term senior services division advocates and with a long history. Jackie is chair of the ASPAC group, and Rob a member of both that group and Ashland Senior Advisory Committee. So welcome.
We have
And
Gary on the call too.
okay, hi Gary. All right. Is anybody here who's unfamiliar with using the Zoom platform? Everybody trained up by now? Okay.
Anne, I just wanted to ask, are you going to have people raise their hand, or how are you going to have people identified they want to speak?
I think we can try because it's a small enough group to keep people unmuted, but not to, you know, have crosstalk and so forth. Because if that starts happening, or if anybody's got, you know, noise in the background, we can just have Natalie mute everybody, and then we can, you know, raise hands if you want to be called on. And in fact, raise your hand if you want to be called on, even if we're all unmuted. So I think that's a good protocol for us. I think we can get to the very long. Oh, Mike.
I want to say that there's some people here I don't know, and I was wondering why their picture isn't here. Like Aliana Darrow.
Aliana, I believe, is with the Ashland Tidings, and Rob is here as a guest. There he is.
Hi, Rob.
And Gary Schaff is going to make a public comment. So,
Okay, I'm good.
all right, good. All right, well, let's move on to that very long deferred approval of the March 9th meetings. Are there any additions, changes, comments? Okay, can I have a motion to approve the minutes?
I move that we approve those minutes.
Second?
Second.
Okay. All in favor, say aye.
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 Okay. Well, good. The minutes are approved. We'll have to come back to them when they're ancient history. Okay. So, how about the agenda? Are there any additions or changes to the agenda that have emerged?
No,
Okay.
not
Okay.
from staff.
Okay. Well, moving along, I believe, Gary, you have public input for us. Oh, you need to unmute. Gary, you need to unmute. Or maybe.
On your screen, you ought to see a button that says mute or unmute. Hit it.
A little microphone button.
On the lower left, on mine.
Oh, phone. No, I don't.
Oh, are you on a phone, Gary? Let's see.
Oh, you
Finally.
got it.
Yes, I was getting messages portrayed on the part of the screen where the mute button switch was located. So, in any event, yes, I'm here. I trust that each of you received my memo about participating in a study concerning reducing speeds in the city of Ashland. And I'm hoping that a member of the advisory committee would choose to participate along with members from the Conservation and Climate Outreach Committee, the Transportation Committee or Commission, and the Climate and Policy Commission. Each of those organizations, I anticipate, will designate one or more persons to participate in this, what we're calling a work group, to formalize a request to the city council to designate and change the speeds on roads in the city that allow, which are allowed to be reduced consistent with state statute.
Okay. So since this is public comment, we don't have a discussion.
Understand.
So since you're looking for a specific answer, we can kind of break the protocol now and just see if there's anyone who is able to assist with this input from ASAC. I thought that would probably be the case simply because as you can see, we're a pretty small group we've asked for people to participate on some of the other commissions, regular commissions, and we've really had trouble getting people to do that.
Understandable.
Yeah.
Yeah, the citizens who participate and contribute to local government often are overly committed to begin with. But in any event, I hope that when the position paper and background information is available, that you'll be able to place that on your agenda for either the January or February meeting to consider endorsing the position that paper, whatever it might be, includes.
Okay. I think if we have any questions in the meantime, we can communicate with you.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm running. Bye-bye.
Okay. All righty. Well, we're zooming along here. So, we're on number 5, our member and officer changes. So, Rob, you need to show your little face here so we can thank you for your service. You know, as I say, it's, you know, you were a really important member of the ad hoc committee, and you served on our committee very helpfully, and I'm so glad that you're going to stay involved as an interested citizen. And so thank you very much. And and we were hoping to be able to welcome Gina as a new member of ASAC. Her recent election to the city council and her remaining on the Housing and Human Services Commission has made her feel she might be overextended. So we will be looking for other people. And at my own tenure as chair, Sandy?
Not really just waving at Rob. I wanted to.
Oh, you wanted to say something.
I wanted to say something, and it's about Rob. And I just want to say how much I appreciated your input. You're quiet and you don't say a lot, but when you do, it really is meaningful. And I really appreciated it. And I also appreciated particularly kind of the way you spanned both the group as a citizen, but then also in a somewhat similar to position to what Eileen is, so that I appreciated your awareness of when our group might be making her life more difficult when we didn't necessarily need to. And not just saying don't do it, but maybe offering some alternatives. So for those things, I really appreciated you, particularly as chair, and to say thank you. And I also, as Anne, I'm glad that you're going to stay involved.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
And speaking of kudos, Sandy has served ably as chair for 2 years, and we're delighted that she has agreed to do another term and keep that continuity of expertise going, and in a calm and sage-like presence. And of course, she's going to be, well, we'll talk about this later, but she'll be chairing the Livable Ashland initiative. So
I'm sorry. I've got Steph Seffinger calling me.
Okay. All right. Well, so as you can see, oh, good. There's Steph. We definitely have a quorum with Steph. Oh, there she is. Hi, Steph.
Hi.
Okay, well, we're on agenda number 5 on the list. And we're just at the point where we're talking about the need to enlarge our group to replace Rob and now Gina. And we're going to be electing a new chair in June, or well, for July. So, you know, the question is recruitment and looking to both add depth in the program participant group and the citizen group, and looking for people who might want a leadership position on the council. So I don't know that we need to, go ahead, Eileen.
So right now for this term that started in July, even though we weren't meeting and goes through June, we do need to see if we can elect a co-chair and ideally somebody who's willing to step into the chair position starting in July, unless we can persuade you to do a second term in July.
Yeah, well, and that's a possibility, but I think we have an opportunity in the recruitment phase to perhaps find somebody who would like to be involved in that kind of capacity. So anyway, do we need any more discussion now, or should we move on to our other, in other words, do people want to recommend people now, or should we just do that through individual communications with Eileen? Just
I'd recommend you see if there's somebody who'd like to be co-chair now of the present group before we start thinking outside of the group.
Okay.
I mean, and then if there isn't, then we'll need to do something different. But I think you have that group here, and I think that would technically be the thing to do
first. Okay, good. All right, well, here we are. I guess that means
Steph. I mean, my first should step up.
I stepped up once is too much.
Yeah,
no, I've got because of COVID and all, I'm doing extra at the food bank. So I'm there 2 full mornings a week, and I'm still bringing food to the Food and Friends at the Senior Center every week. Plus, I deliver Meals on Wheels. So I think I'm not able to step up now.
Well, and there's nothing preventing Mike Gardner.
No, not at all. You know, I end up chairing every commission and a job that I take anyway. So I'd be more than happy to be co-chair as long as Ann volunteers to go run for a second term in July. So I don't mind being the fallback, you know.
Huh. Yeah. All right. So, well, I appreciate that.
My hand's raised. So I can do it if you'll feel comfortable with that. It's like our group is so small now. It's tough to get folks that haven't already done the job or
I know you know how to run a meeting.
Yeah, and I don't have anything going on, so why not?
Well, yeah, that's right. Maybe you can bring your instrument next time.
Yeah. Right. I'll serenade from the co-chair position.
All right, good. Thank you so much. Do we need to take a vote on that? Yeah, I guess we could.
We do take a vote. You would just, as a formality, say, are there any other nominations? And then hearing none, you would take a vote.
Okay. Are there any other nominations? Hearing none, let's take a vote. All in favor of Mike Gardner, say aye.
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 Okay. Thanks. Great. Well, that's a welcome relief. Okay. So now we're on to the emergency response and recovery update. Oh my gosh. Eileen, you want to kick it off?
Yeah. Well, welcome to ASAC in 2020, huh? I sent you some updates via email over time, as you know, but I'll just review, especially for our guests and on the call, that Ashland Parks and Rec has a role in emergencies. We are part of the emergency operations for the city, and the role of Parks and Rec, excuse me, little frog, the role of Parks and Rec is to do care and shelter. And so both with the COVID emergency and again in the fire emergency, we've been very involved, and Senior Services has been very involved, especially under COVID. So we got very involved in identifying what social services were still available. My team was amazing in tracking that down. As the emergencies progressed, we get more and more information from our larger community, and after a while didn't have to track that ourselves. But it became very important for our senior community, who were very much in the category of those most vulnerable to COVID. And I just want to give enormous kudos to my staff, to Natalie and to Corey. They did huge amounts of research at the beginning. They answered the phone. You know, we shut down earlier than some other places because of our vulnerable population. We actually shut down that Friday right after our last ASAC meeting. I think that was March 13th. We shut our doors and became a very busy call center for seniors who were trying to figure out how they were going to get their groceries, what they should do about their doctor, who was going to help them get their taxes done. And we created a wonderful page on online. We called it COVID-19 Senior Resources. And in fact, I encourage you to go there. It's on the Ashland City Resources page, and I know I've sent out links before, or it's just on the Ashland website. And that we've continued because we fortunately are a conduit of a lot of information coming in, and we heard from AARP what they're doing about their taxes, and we heard from other organizations, and we followed all the guidance from Oregon Health Authority very closely, and we continue to post that. We post a lot of things from Ollie. Ollie did a great selection of how can you stay engaged with lifelong learning while you're at home? What's available online? But of course, only a portion of our audience, maybe half, has good access online. And so the phone and looking things up for people, you know, even under normal circumstances now, phone books aren't what they used to be. Paper phone books just aren't the thing. And if you don't have an internet connection, it's very hard to figure out how to even call somebody. So we answer many calls every week, basically being an information conduit for people. We look up the phone number, look at what's being said on that business. Are they open? Is that social service office open? We also got involved very early on with a group of citizens who created Adopt a Neighbor Ashland. And the senior services role is the part I'm going to focus on in my report, but I was personally put in charge of helping organize that. It became a joint project where half the workers were the citizen group led by Tanya Graham, and half the workers were city staff that were appointed into this. And that included someone from our recreation division and someone from our admin division who were incredible to work with as we just found our way through brand new territory, including the fact that there was no time or financial resources to background check the hundreds of volunteers that initially volunteered. And so we put waivers and guidance in place instead. Adopt a Neighbor had a system to, because they were connected to the voter rolls, it originally came out of campaign material. So they just verified that people actually were lived at the address they said they were as a failsafe, and anybody who didn't just wasn't matched. So that was one sort of caution that we could take besides really encouraging people not to share their personal information and such. But that program ultimately grew to help over 90 people who were really the most vulnerable. And but now it's gone on and on. COVID is not going away. We may see more people needing services. Unfortunately, the volunteer pool really shrank over time. And if there's anybody you know who has energy to volunteer, we could really use some more volunteers, because we feel that we need to maintain the program until there is a viable vaccine that's really saturated the community. We just did a lot of work to figure out how real our numbers were by contacting every person involved at the volunteer and or the neighbor, the recipient level. And we've now shrunk down to 35 people. These are typically very vulnerable people, and people with serious other conditions or significant disability, because a lot of people who initially signed up to get help, as some of the other interventions were rolled out in stores and as online shopping became more and more available and some of the shopping services, the people who have more economic ability, more physical ability, people who became, you know, felt more safe going into stores with the precautions in place, our numbers have shrunk. We now have 35 active people receiving and 31 active volunteers, but we're still working on getting more volunteers. The second big program that we initiated concurrently was our Senior Phone Buddy program. And that was, again, designed wasn't a volunteer program, it was a peer-to-peer, and we got approval from our legal department to just get it up and running with guidelines rather than background checks, with, you know, really that encouragement. Hey, you know, visit with people, you know, check in every couple of days, be social, visit, but don't share you don't even need to share your address. You're just talking on the phone, and certainly don't ever give away, no matter how much you like the person, you need to keep your personal, your private financial information and such to yourself. That we had a lot of wonderful matches out of that, and Natalie single-handedly did all that coordinating and continues to do that. And we also had some people who needed to be rematched quite a few times. And Natalie initiated and executed a wonderful evaluation similar to what we've just done with Adopt a Neighbor of first online and then calling, having volunteer. We have a wonderful volunteer who calls everybody who doesn't answer online. We've concluded out of that we need to start to move that to more of a volunteer model. And I'll talk more. I'm going to postpone this to my report. I'll talk more about a model that's been made available to us. And so we've just continued helping everybody in that way with our initial few months. And then we generated some outdoor programming. And then at the same time, we got the right equipment so that we could do Zoom presentations with a camera at our centers, especially for yoga. It's been really helpful for the teachers to be on our camera and be able to have our big screen in front of them so they can see their participants. But Natalie has resumed virtual education. We had such a popular monthly education series that Natalie had created in the last couple years as things were getting bigger and bigger and more enrollment. We just were having such successful meetings, and then whew, crash, it all came down. But she'll tell you about some of the virtual education that she's doing. So those were some of the many ways that our response has been, both initially with response and then what you might call recovery, of trying to recover our regular services, but in a different format. And that has included some wonderful drive-ins recently. But then we had fires. So that's another big part of emergency response. That came a little less into my staff. And I should have said that my staff were very active with the Adopt a Neighbor, because we decided that senior services staff, rather than being the key implementers of Adopt a Neighbor, would instead be the people to receive people who needed other services, which quite a few of our Adopt a Neighbor recipients had other needs. And my staff became the recipient of those needs to match to community services. And we also did a lot of outreach calls. I would be remiss if I didn't mention that. We started with the most vulnerable of our patrons that we were aware of. And we had a list from the disaster registry run by the Rogue Valley Council of Governments. We did an interagency confidential exchange, and we got the list of all the Ashland folks, and we called all of them and offered them these new services. And then staff and volunteers went on to call bit by bit, eventually every person that we had a phone number for, to see how they were doing. So then when the fire came along, with the help of our volunteer, all of the people that we had on our list that were actually Talon and Phoenix people got calls to see how they were doing. There are a few people in our circles that lost their homes and, you know, are trying to land on their feet, and we helped guide them to that counseling for those kinds of resources and help that's available. And again, Ashland Parks and Rec was on care and shelter, and this time shelter became a really, really big issue. So Michael Black and Linda Reed, who actually works with the planning division, worked really hard on both short-term and then longer-term solutions for shelter. And myself and Rachel Dials, and again, admin staff, Sean Sullivan and Tara Kuhl and Dorinda Cottle, worked on what we ended up focusing on in terms of services was, rather than duplicating services, trying to help Ashland residents and Talent residents, we're calling this too, find the services that were existing in the community. And one of our best tools was a website that we were able to get up really quickly when, frankly, Talon and Phoenix were in utter chaos, right? You know, their towns had just burned down. And so many people in Ashland were trying to help their friends who had been displaced, or trying to just, where can I make donations? Where can I take things? What's the best thing to do? And again, because we have very strong communication channels, this is all these partnerships that we've worked on for years, right? And that were such an important part of our goals for the advisory committee to develop those partnerships. All of those have come into play very well with both of those disasters, that we were able to be the conduit to our community. We actually set up a helpline. The website ultimately seemed to be what the community needed. We had 6,000 hits on that website in the first 3 days because nobody else was available. Nobody else had a phone number at that moment in time. Other people were beginning to set up websites, but it just took a little while for the dust to settle. Our website continued to get quite a few hits, 100 a day and then 50 a day for a while. We ended up closing it at the end of October, the very end of October, because the county by then had really taken on the recovery effort with Rogue Valley Rebuild is their website. And there's, you can imagine it's really something when everybody's running separate information, trying to keep it all up to date. You know, I think we did a really good job. It certainly took a lot of my time just to help you understand, again, the senior services part of that. Because I'm at the hub of knowing about so many of our partner agencies in the community, I was getting a lot of information. Because Natalie and I participate in the Rogue Valley Organizations Against Disaster. We've been participating in that for the last 2 years. We and their website is called roguevalley.recovers.org. we were getting a lot of information in, and I was doing a lot of filtering and rewriting, and Sean Sullivan did an amazing job distilling it onto the website. So it was quite a bit of staff time. And then Dorinda also was helping with the website and other communications. But it was a really important way for us to step in. And I think the fact that Senior Services has those relationships really has made us very, very valuable to the larger city as a whole this year. And I know the city has been extremely pleased with our role in that. And, you know, glad that somebody in the community keeps that going. And certainly Linda Reed keeps lots of similar connections as part of the Housing and Human Services Commission as well, but slightly different realms. So, and also our ties with AARP. I got a call early on after the fire from Bon Dineshbeshra from the state level AARP. What is it that seniors need? And I'm able to say, hey, a lot of affordable housing for seniors and others really got wiped out in this fire. That's probably what was hit the hardest, was the affordable housing that's such a narrow resource in our community already. And when Bondana is saying, what should we be advocating for as AARP, I can say, you know, please make sure when you're at the table at the state level that they're thinking about senior subsidized housing and senior affordable housing, the manufactured homes and the trailer parks. And already we have nearly not enough of formally HUD-subsidized senior housing. So I think that's a good place for me to start. I know that all of you are connected to other organizations, and maybe we want to just open it up a little bit, Anne, for people to say about other pieces of that response and recovery that they're aware of that our committee can benefit from knowing, or if you have any questions for me.
Well, let me just first say kudos to you and the staff for all the work that has been done by you. And if there is any silver lining to all of this, is I think it establishes one of the biggest needs in senior services is information. And the information is needed both by seniors and their adult children, family members who, you know, don't know who to turn to when their mom and dads are needing help, whether they live here or elsewhere. And so having people recognize that this is a viable and vital information resource is good. And Aliana, I think there's an opportunity for the public to understand that very important role that our Senior Services Division plays. And obviously, I think the Pan Rogue Valley sensibility, the fact that that Ashlyn was able to extend information services to Talent in Phoenix is you know, really admirable. So kudos.
Thank you.
So I don't know if anybody else has any comments about the emergency response. I think some of us have had some concerns about notifications and things like this. This was a pretty extraordinary event in that it was so rapid and so destructive. But I have heard commentary that the notifications were not as prompt, and actually to the extent that people did not get injured or killed. It's just amazing given how quickly people had to move. But I have heard that comment, and maybe other people have heard it too. So if there's any, I would say probably suggestions for improvements, that would probably be a better focus. Anybody?
Well, just in terms of what I know, the NICSL system is really only for Ashlyn, and it isn't the same as the system for Talent or for Phoenix. So that their system didn't work very well. In terms of what we did, our police actually ended up going and knocking on doors, mm-hmm. even in talent. And some of the concerns were about traffic and I-5 closed and the trucks going through town, which really wasn't a decision of the city. And so understanding what the city again can do and can't do, we are talking with the ODOT about that process. There is definitely a committee being formed to look at fire response and emergency response and neighborhoods that only have one way out, and what could be done in terms of even bulldozing kind of rough roads through that. So there's a lot being done right now in terms of trying to look at all of that. It's sort of like the federal government in a way, in that right now we have an interim city administrator that will become the city manager until a new city manager is hired. So that's a position that's going to be recruited for probably in January, starting in January. We have a new council whose priorities are going to be possibly somewhat different than other councilors' priorities have been. Some of the councilors ran on a budget, reduced budget platform. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with that. But I think we're not going to see as many. We're in a situation kind of like the federal government of changing guards and what the new guard will look like. I think kudos need to really go to Parks and Recreation and in general. People saw that as one of the most stable parts of our city government. I think that everyone did an amazing job with that. I really hope that we really put forward what the senior center really is. It's so much more than it's almost the social service hub of the city, really. And somehow I'd like that to be highlighted before the next budget comes out. Those are my statements anyway.
Rob?
I'd just like to let the senior committee know that Ollie is offering a class on disaster prep in starting in January. It's going to be taught by Terry Eubanks from the CERC program. And it's only three sessions. And if you know of any older adults or seniors who can't afford the Ollie membership fee, just have them contact the Ollie office. We'll set them up with a scholarship. And it'd be a great way for people to get a kind of an introduction to how they can be better prepared for the next disaster.
Yeah, I think I would like to comment from my observation that we're a rogue valley. And what I observed with the response was the concern of coordination among municipalities. And I found the idea of saying, hey, bring your sleeping bags and towels and clothes and food to the wherever. I mean, I just imagined that we should have a better way of processing contributions, financial and goods, because I just have a feeling that a lot of stuff might have just ended up in the landfill. There weren't, you know, it didn't seem like there was enough specificity and central suggestions around how people could help.
I think it was one of the things that surprised me was it wasn't very long
before the email messages those of us who were using the app got were, don't bring any more stuff.
Right. Yeah.
Money, yes. Stuff, no. We got too much of everything. The only thing is that the food bank was supplying lots of food through intermediaries, not directly. And Ray just got back from vacation today. And he's going to be very busy for the next 2 weeks with Thanksgiving, because with COVID, and we're giving boxes to anybody and everybody from Talent or Ashland who wants one. If you know people in Phoenix, tell them to say they're from Talent. You know, but it will be different than before, because we can't have 300 people jammed in a small room. You know, that's not COVID allowed. So it will be a serious undertaking probably from now until a few days before Thanksgiving. After that, maybe Eileen could really sit down with Ray and see what kinds of things we can do to make sure everybody eats. I know that I provide Zara, who's the Food and Friends coordinator, with whatever she wants. Every Tuesday I say to her, what do you want me to bring you? And it varies from a total of 60 items to nothing. This week I'm full, don't bring anything. Or I need 24 cans of soup, and you know, et cetera, et cetera. And it's always available, and she always gets it. So food bank's doing its share.
Great.
I think
go ahead.
I want to thank Steph for helping initiate our resumption of Mike always used to bring bread on Wednesdays, and then he started bringing things like peanut butter or tuna when there was surplus, and he'd check with us. There's, of course, now Food and Friends is just doing some scheduled meal pickup, so it's far less people than used to come to the dining room there. But Steph asked us about it, and we started talking, and Mike stepped up to do what he used to do, and they got the timing worked out, because the people who are picking up meals at the senior center are really those with food insecurity for the most part, not, you know, the folks who used to come more importantly for the social part themselves, that it wasn't a financial barrier for them. Those people aren't picking up meals nearly as much. And so to be able to provide the extra nutrition in one stop for them by giving them some extra goods with their meal pickup once a week has really been wonderful. So our cross-fertilization with the Ashland Emergency Food Bank is very strong between Steph on the board and Mike as such a really vigorous volunteer for them. So thank you.
I would just like to say that one other suggestion, and I don't know to whom it should go, is getting drones up in the air during this kind of a situation with a fire, especially one that's moving so rapidly. I just felt like I didn't know where it was going and how quickly and all of that stuff. Even things like escape routes for getting out of the city or out of anywhere. It seems like that would have been helpful to have.
Drones are in the budget at the study session for the Greenway. There are people, however, that are not wanting that because they say it's targeting homeless people. So,
well, I mean, it can go up higher. You don't have to look at individual people, but I mean, you want to know where
you only see during the day. All you see is the heat. So you can't really tell if it's a fire or a person, really. During the night you could, but not during the day. During the day.
And you know, Rogue Valley Council of Governments has drones available for, I don't know, they have some resource that they share with the other RVCOG entities. Mike?
Yeah, you know, the Ashland Fire and Rescue uses the drones during fire season. So So through RVCOG, just as info.
Okay. Well, we're on track, but we should keep moving. I suppose if there are any comments about improvements to emergency response or ideas or whatever, you can channel them through Eileen and Steph. So we were at the point where we're talking standing reports, and so we want to start with APRC update. Are there any things pertaining to seniors?
No, not really that much that we haven't already discussed. I would just say two things just for general information is the Japanese Garden is in Lithia Park is being closed for remodeling starting today. That's going to be probably an 18 to 24 month process, but just as information. And also, I don't know how many of you ice skate, but we were planning kind of an abbreviated ice rink season this year with no cover. But with the current restrictions that just got put on Jackson County because of the COVID increase, we're going to have to pause the ice rink as well, even though we set up the boards and we're ready for an opening later this month. That's not going to happen. So your grandkids won't be able to skate for a while. But that was really, you know, other than the other discussion that was, you know, that we had, I really don't have anything else to add unless Michael Black wants to chime in if he's still listening. But that's all from APRC, really.
Is there anything on the pool?
I'll chime in on the pool. Mike, I thought you covered the other stuff well. And as far as the pool goes, we're meeting on Thursday with the consultant to go over the numbers as far as how much they're anticipating it's going to cost. We did slow down quite a bit on this because of COVID first. And then also we went back to the drawing board at the request of one of the commissioners and some people on the council and the Energy Action Committee. I'm not sure exactly what that committee is called, but they were formed through the Climate Energy Action Plan. We are looking at several options for energy efficiency, including an all electric model for heating the pool. And so that our consultants have just finished that work, and we are going to go over that with them this Thursday. And then we will be scheduling a public meeting that we'll do over Zoom so that everybody in the community can see the plans and comment on the plans as well. But the dollars, as far as the dollars go, the price went up. It's not horrible. It's not like it doubled. But once you start adding on the electric and everything, it's going up quite a bit. So the commissioners will have to make a decision on how much they want to fund on this. We're obviously going to be meeting some energy restrictions and requirements because that's what we want to do, but I'm not sure that we can afford to do everything. So that's my two cents on that.
Michael, do you know what the new restrictions are? Have they been put out?
Well, there's state restrictions. Is that what you're talking about? How much money you have to put into green energy?
In terms of, I think that they're gonna only allow six people and those kind of the restrictions.
For swimming pools?
For just, I understand that Wednesday they're coming out with new restrictions.
Yeah, I don't know what those are yet. But we're expecting that the restrictions for gatherings to during this pause, they've already been restricted even more. We're kind of planning for that to go on a little bit longer than just 2 weeks. I believe we're gonna probably see ourselves going maybe back down to phase one. We're not sure yet, but we're getting geared up for that.
I actually have a question about the restrictions. I have not seen anything attributing the rapid increase in cases to the fire per se. But you gotta mm-hmm. believe that people are all mingling because they're in, you know, they're in an expo or something that you would see more impact from fires. Has that been discussed at the within the city channels?
Not on the admin level. We haven't discussed that within. I'm involved with the city admin as well. We haven't discussed that. No.
I track COVID by zip code, and it's Medford by a huge amount, way more than the population ratio. And it's because of the kinds of things I see when I go to Medford weekly, is that a lot of young people just simply don't follow rules, and they simply do whatever they want. And when somebody in a big store like Fred Meyer says to him, excuse me, you should put a mask on, here's a free mask, they tell him, I have a condition and I'm not allowed to wear a mask, and they walk off. And that's the kind of thing that I've seen not once or twice, but dozens of times during my trips to Medford. And the data from Medford versus, for example, Ashland indicates that. Ashland does pretty well per population, certainly many times better than Medford and White City and Eagle Point based on population. So I don't know what we in Ashland can do.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, let's move on and get an update from Steph on the city.
Well, it kind of is sort of what I have already said, in that we're kind of in the middle of transition. We've been working on how to improve emergency response, what the role specifically of the mayor and the city council will be given the new city manager position. Basically, the city manager will be the CEO of the city. The council will probably have more decision-making power, and the mayor less with this new form of government, in that the mayor will not be appointing department heads anymore. It will be the city manager. And the city council will be affirming that, but not not specifically. It may be that the office arrangement is different. It looks like probably there won't be a mayor's office anymore. It'll probably be moved downstairs and be an elected's office, which has some space for anybody that's elected to have their mail and a phone access and that kind of thing. Right now we have a new city financial person that's just started recently. There have been new appointments to the budget committee, and there may be another one coming up. And as you probably already know, those on the council will be changing in terms of Rich Rosenthal will be retiring from the council, as will Dennis. Tanya will remain on the council, as will Steve Jensen and myself. Tanya Graham Julie has the position of mayor now. Her position is filled by Gina Duquesne, and Paula Hyatt is filling the position left by Dennis Slattery. So that's kind of the makeup of things now. How the things I've heard about are, Sean is also on the council now, Moran, is that both Julie and Sean ran on a kind of a ticket with two other counselors in terms of, or contestants, with regard to budget as being a priority. So it will be interesting to see when the next budget comes about what that does mean in reality in terms of what the priorities of the city council will be. Any questions?
Well, we'll just stay on that and see if we need to do more advocacy or education of the new council members about the needs of seniors. I think we've done a pretty good job educating the existing council on actually the role of seniors in the constellation of residents, that, you know, it's not an us versus them. It's not young people versus old people or whatever, but, you know, the needs of seniors are the needs of families, and working adults are impacted by senior services not being there for them. So hopefully we won't get into any kind of intergenerational conflicts that can't be addressed through education.
I think including diversity, how the senior center is welcoming of all ethnicities, all social or sexual orientations, those kinds of ways of putting the senior center in the new reality of all of that, you know.
Right.
It's probably important.
I saw your hand, and then Eileen.
So I just had a question for Steph. So two people on the budget committee got elected to city council. So there'll be actually two spots to replace on the budget committee. Is that correct?
Well, two positions were replaced, but I think there may be another position coming up.
Sean and Paula Hyatt were both on the budget committee.
Paula's position will be up for a new position.
Right.
There's going to be a citizen that will be need to be recruited for that position.
But same for Sean Moran, correct?
Sean Moran as well.
Yeah. Okay.
So those two positions, and there's the possibility of even a third position. So.
So definitely think about that.
Well, you know, I think it's important to think about people that have from my perspective, an interest in parks, an interest in an age-friendly community. Those things are going to be important because not all of the council will have those as predominant issues, I don't think, at least from what they've said that their issues are.
All right. So definitely, Eileen, you had some comments.
I just want us to perhaps all try not to refer to the Senior Services Division as just the Senior Center. I think that's been part of trying to reframe what we're doing for seniors, and especially because the senior center itself is actually closed to the public, that makes our purpose sound really small. So especially with new council members coming on, if we can all watch our language, I love your suggestion, Steph, that we need to somehow get in front of this council before the biennium budget and a lot of the outgoing council members know how critical senior services was in the disaster response because, you know, I got feedback via Michael that city leaders were really appreciative, but I think we have to make sure the new ones know that it's not just about running a senior center that's actually physically closed right now.
Sandy.
Well, I could say this later on, but I'm thinking that some of this might come into the agenda for the Livable Ashland group. And as we talk maybe about that idea, going to the new counselors. I mean, we've been to parks, we've been to the council, but I think the idea of making sure the new group or the group as a whole, as it's now reconstituted, knows what we're about once we really kind of figure out more what we're about, might be a possibility of a way to go.
Okay. Well, we should move on because we have we have other stuff to get through. So, Natalie, do you?
And I just am going to say I'm going to have to leave at about 5 to 5 because I have a another Zoom meeting to do.
So. All right, great, thanks. Education.
Thank you, Anne. So we did manage starting in the fall to pull off some virtual education offerings. The first was we always partner with Providence for their annual fall clinic in September. They transitioned that to a totally Zoom platform. So we weren't directly involved in hosting that, but we did do publicity for them in our newsletter and our play guide, and in that way helped a little bit with some of their registration. If we had folks, for example, who couldn't register themselves online, we were able to help that and help facilitate that to, I don't remember how many they had. I think it was probably close to 30 participants, which is good. And then senior services arranged independently a Medicare presentation on October 7th to try and get people who had any questions about open enrollment, which is currently going on, have an opportunity to talk to some knowledgeable people. We partnered with Futurity First, their financial advisors who have presented for us before and do a lot of pro bono education in the community. So that was really helpful for the people who did attend and were able to engage, you know, interactively with Zoom rather than watching a recorded something. And we had a sort of a mindfulness workshop later on in October. Because one thing that is really on our radars is supporting mental health in general for older adults, but particularly with this challenging year that we've been having. So that was a local OLLI instructor, Victoria Leo, who gave a very fun, interactive presentation on tools, powerful tools for harnessing, I can't remember the exact title, but basically peace of mind. and that went really well. And it was fun because she has this big thing about creativity and how to make your own Christmas presents and things like that. We have a nature journaling workshop in December that again is, you know, we're trying to be as interactive as possible with these things. And so people can engage that way. Our instructor, will be the manager down at the Nature Center, part of Parks and Rec, which is, she's really excited because she's only talked to kids before. So this is an opportunity for her to develop, for a bigger audience. And then, I will be working with Anne, who will hopefully do a presentation for us, in January about retirement transitions. And, if I'm putting that correctly, as a discussion.
Yeah, I think identity, meaning, and purpose for aging adults is a big challenge. And I did a presentation on this for the Ashland YMCA. But I think I will try to make it more interactive because I think people need to acknowledge how this is a challenge for them personally, you know.
Yeah.
And volunteerism is one of the big antidotes to those missing pieces. And maybe we can help recruit some volunteers for the program. I mean, we had 650 OLLI volunteers, and without having the things going on that we had, I think there's an opportunity for maybe getting some people there.
Yeah,
And I don't, this is kind of in your area, Natalie, but, you know, we're having six community lectures. Ollie is offering them. Asante is doing them, and they'll be Zoom. So it's free public lectures, and I can get you the topics. But I think that it's health related, so it would have a lot of relevance to our demographic.
That would be wonderful. We could put those definitely in our webpage, and we'll see how else we can spread the word. But looks like
it reminds me that I want to thank Rob for his help. He receives our messages about what we're doing, and he's really good about making sure our things get into the Ollie email, your weekly emails that you do. And in reverse, some things that really need to have a high profile that we can have a freeway for our constituents to take them. If we can have enough advance notice, we'd love to make room for that in our newsletter. And I think being able to highlight a health series that's free, we actually were talking to Asante about doing some stuff. And then my wonderful contact with Shirley has left there. So I think this would be a great way to dovetail. And we've actually had conversations with the library as well, that now in some ways we have these separate but overlapping audiences with all these different programs. Mm-hmm. But now with COVID, all of us are going virtual, and it means that you can offer to more people for the same price, you know, the same effort. And I think there's opportunities to advertise each other's opportunities a little more, as long as we all stay on mission for ourselves. So we can't advertise every Ollie program, but we can advertise things that really meet our agenda of trying to do some health education, for instance. So, yeah, thank you. Keep us posted. I know Rob sends me the Ollie emails all the time, and I'm always looking for things that we've picked up lots of good things that we've put on our resource page for COVID or whatever. So it's how we do these partnerships.
All right. Well, we're at the time that I thought we would be done with these reports. So Eileen, can you?
I think I said a lot of it earlier, because so much of what I had to report to you was related to our disaster. So that's good. As always, I sent you my written report. I also attached the ones that I had sent out previously when we weren't actually meeting. Those reports only went to you, but I wanted to make them part of the public record. So let me just pause and ask if there's any questions on those reports.
Well, no questions, just a comment. I mean, I can't believe how busy you all have been and how productive. So thank you.
Yes.
You're welcome. Thank you. And something I saved to really point out here is that those of you who you've all been on from the beginning of our process I started in August, and by November, we really mapped out our goals. You know, what's our mission? What's our big agenda items that we have over the coming years? And what parts of that did we want to work on first? And that has been our guiding light through all of this. But I have to say, in that first year after that, we worked a lot on increasing services, increasing programming a lot. Natalie's just done a tremendous job. And looking at our publicity and our public awareness. So we worked really hard on some things, but one thing we hadn't pushed as hard in that first year was doing more for the most vulnerable seniors. We continued to serve and help those seniors and their families that reached us, and we pushed our publicity out to reach more, and I certainly saw our call volume going up, but we didn't ever have time to begin implementing what we had thought would be our first step with that, was the gatekeeper program that is a model from the state. I have to say, things have changed a lot over time. And what I saw with COVID-19 is our mission really turned toward helping the most vulnerable in our community and continuing to reach those people. I feel like the bulk of our staff time and programming has been for those vulnerable adults. And so on that level, I'm really glad that we've been able to uplift that part of our agenda so much more. And I'm not really sure that Gatekeeper is the way for us to go in that direction. But what I am sure of is the CALL program really has an important role. Again, moving from that model of senior phone buddy, we want to move toward a model of trained volunteers who are background checked, because the volunteers who are getting that support and getting that background check are more able to be there for that portion of our people who signed up for it, who really need someone who's just there for them, maybe because of the degree of their issues going on or because of their lifelong social skills or lack thereof. These are some of the folks that have the least natural organic support systems, who need a listener who's really going to be there for them and be there skillfully. And so we've been introduced to a program from the Motion Picture and Television Foundation. They're based in LA. They're quite large. And this is all through our connections nationally. I heard about this through the NCOA, National Council on Aging. These folks have developed a really good program, and then they went after their more grant money to make really good toolkits for other agencies to use and to train volunteers with. And then they went after more money to fund a call center system, so an electronic solution that lets you train volunteers, and the staff time that normally goes into hounding volunteers to see whether they're following through or to give you their hours, that is not the fun part of volunteering, to have to report all your statistics. So I can tell you only about 10% of volunteers really do that part very well, you know, is all built into this call center that also protects people's privacy. And they are literally funding it with outside grants so that other agencies like ours can use the call center. And so Natalie and I are very excited about moving in this direction in 2021. And I've even already had conversation with the Hearth that is training volunteers to be good listeners. And they did a whole new round because of the fires. And then they realized they had so many more people interested than they needed to do fire. And they began to reach out to other organizations. And I said, well, I've got one coming for you. And if they can do more intensive training on listening skills, then we've got a place to apply those skills. So we're really excited about that movement, and I'll bring more to you in the future. And I'll stop my report there.
Okay, great. Thank you. And Sandy, particularly because you're needing to buzz off early, maybe you ought to jump in on Livable Ashland update.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, I was also going to say, just kind of related to some of what Eileen's been talking about, perhaps at a future meeting, it would be wise for us to revisit that,
the goals.
Because I hear what you're saying, and I think it's wonderful, and I don't see any problem with data telling us that we need to move to something else. But I, the academic in me, I suppose, says let's keep what we're doing aligned with what our overarching goals are, because they have guided us, and I think they really have helped us. So I just propose that. Livable Ashland. We are also going through a leadership change. Anne has been very ably guiding that group, that work group, since its beginning, and since she is the chair of this group, she asked me if I'd be willing to chair Livable Ashland. So I will do that. My disadvantage is I actually had to miss the last couple meetings of that group. So this Thursday will kind of be my first initiation back into that group. So I'm not gonna give you a long report. I think maybe the next meeting I'll be able to do that a little bit more. But where we are, I think there are a couple of things. I'm not going to review where we are. I believe you know all that information, but we are looking to broaden our network in terms of a steering committee and then also interested people. We do have some broadening because we have the CEO of the Y, the head of the library. We're working on somebody from healthcare, possibly somebody from the religious groups in Ashland, either to be part of a working group or part of a broader stakeholder group. And it's kind of in the process of how that's working. So we also know that as part of the AARP mandate maybe is too strong a word, but the first thing for us to do is a needs assessment. And we have gathered information from existing needs assessments that I think we've talked about before in this group, looking at where they go along with the 8 domains that AARP talks about, and then figuring out what we have to do in addition in terms of a needs assessment. And we'll have some discussion about that on our meeting on Thursday. Anne, you want to say anything more? You're really more.
No, I think the next meeting that we have, we'll have more to report on it. But just so you know, there's stuff going on, and it's good, and it's intergenerational. I do think there's always a risk of people looking at these age-friendly labels as something that's benefiting a special group, when in fact it's so beneficial to all ages. It's not just universal design. It's if you have a population that's thriving and we're all going to be in that population, then it's really to everybody's benefit. So hopefully we'll avoid any of those intergenerational conflicts in our approach to this, hence calling it Livable Ashland and not all age-friendly Ashland. So, Mike, did you have a comment before I saw your hand? I wasn't sure if you were adjusting your camera or if you were raising it. So.
No, I was. I'm not as up on computers as I should, and I just realized I've been going to Zoom meetings now for a year, and I just realized where the camera is.
Yeah.
I never even bothered to look.
Well,
I checked to make sure that's the camera. But seriously, one of the things we ought to think about is if we've got a message for others that can be sent as an email, then we could start off with this, you know, everybody has to commit to read the emails that the senior services organization sends you. So when you get to the meeting, we don't have someone report what was in the email, and we just start from that point of view, you know, what is your opinion of it or whatever, rather than have to make a presentation of stuff you sent in writing.
Well, I think that
might someday get down to an hour instead of an hour and a half.
Okay. All right. Well, sometimes a little, I don't know, emphasis makes a difference.
A little, yes.
Yeah. Well, you know, we probably ought to get on to the meeting schedule, speaking of meetings.
And we need to just pause and see whether anybody else had something. In items for members.
Oh, well, I should come to think of it. Just to remind people that the OLLI catalog is out. We have 75 classes on Zoom. There are scholarships available for anyone who cannot afford the $125 all-inclusive member fee. And so I don't know if you guys have any distribution capabilities of the catalog, but we have extras if you want them. And you can certainly maybe link to it in the newsletter to let people know about it. And that lecture series is in the catalog. So if you you staff members need copies of the catalog, we'll get them for you. Mike?
So I just wanted to go back to the public input on this lowering of maximum speed limits. So it didn't seem like anyone in the group was really interested in joining that network of people. But I suppose if we put it on the agenda for the next meeting, just to see if we want to endorse what they're doing, you know, just as, you know, just to show them that, well, you know, we can engage with them, even if we don't put someone on that committee, unless somebody really has a burning desire to join that. But
Eileen?
Not a burning desire, but a comment. He seemed to indicate that they were gonna make a white paper or something, and that he'd like to give us that for us to react to and hopefully endorse. Did I understand that properly when he was speaking?
That's what I understood also.
That's what I understood also.
And I'm going to leave.
Okay.
The meeting. Thank you.
Bye. I think one thing that I will communicate this to him individually is that their cost assessment did not include anything related to enforcement. It was only like in changing the speed signs. So that would be a question that I would suggest that they include in their report. Enforcement is, you know, how do you enforce it?
Right. It's possible that there'd be enough discussion that it'd be suitable to talk about a bit next time, or we could wait for an agenda after we get their proposal and hash that out. So I'm curious, Mike, whether you think we should bring it back next time or wait.
I just didn't want to lose sight of it, I guess. So if we think, or if we reach out and there is going to be a communication back to us, we can just wait for that.
Okay.
And from my perspective.
Well, either Eileen or I can let him know.
Okay.
You know. Yeah. Okay. Well, moving on to the meeting schedule, it sounds like we're recommending a schedule that is completely consistent with what we've expected, except for May. And Steph, I think you were maybe having a conflict on the first Monday. Is that right?
The first Monday, I have a council meeting at 5:30.
Oh, so it'd just be back-to-back meetings.
If yeah.
You didn't really want to have dinner, did you?
I don't often get to, but it does make a long day for sure.
Yeah.
Well, the alternative would be the week following our May our scheduled. Eileen?
There used to be some members that had trouble with the third Monday, which is why I didn't propose that, but that may have changed. So maybe we could just hear from people now whether the third Monday, which in this case would be May 17th. Does that work for people?
Who can tell this far in advance? May 17th?
It's the regularly scheduled meetings, not like maybe you have to go in for gallbladder surgery. Do you have any, you know, specific conflict?
My Monday afternoons are all good.
Mike, anything from APRC?
No, we've changed our meetings to Wednesdays.
Okay. So we could do that, and then Steph could have dinner and maybe relax. And
so my council meetings are the first and third Monday.
The same thing.
Why don't we have the second Monday?
The second Monday would be better for me, but or the fourth.
Eileen?
So just to clarify, the second Monday is our regular meeting time. The problem with May 10th, maybe we should have started there, is that it is an APRC furlough day. I'm not sure how aware you are, but with the COVID changes and huge losses of revenue, Michael Black's been very proactive in keeping APRC on budget. And he had proposed, besides there's layoffs, there's temporaries that weren't hired, but the other piece of that was furloughs across the staff. And so we can't make exceptions and work on that day because essentially we also have to stay clear on the message that if we don't have budget, we can't do as much as we used to do. So by closing and not having services on that day. So that's why May 10th isn't going to work, because your staff and your host for this Zoom would not be there. And so only in May, we need to move to a different Monday. And it sounds like people could make the 3rd, that we no longer have a conflict.
It really doesn't matter to me either way, because I have that meeting both times. What would help probably is if it were maybe, there's talk of going back to actual having meetings. I don't know if that will happen by May or not, but even if it were at 3, so that.
Oh, yeah.
Little break.
3 to 4:30 instead of 3:30 to 5.
That would be helpful.
That's good.
Yeah.
I think we can do that for that one date, and I will send you a new one. The reason that we have always done them at 3:30 is that the senior center is open until 3:30, and Natalie and I couldn't attend to people and do this. But heck, if we're still in COVID in May, which I hope we're not, that's a non-issue. But I think we can do it at 3:00 this one time, which is not as a steady diet.
Okay, so everything on the list is the same except May 10th will be 3 to 4:30.
Mike? Exactly. May 3rd.
Are we having a December meeting?
We're doing every other month.
Good. So the next meeting is January.
Yeah, January, March, May.
And we're doing the first or the 3rd?
It's on the last page of your packet with all the dates, and I will edit this and resend it. So how did we land on May 3rd or May 17th for that 3rd.
May
3rd for me, so.
So we'll go with May 3rd.
I have to go, so I'm going to need to leave. See you guys.
Bye.
Bye.
I don't think it doesn't matter as long as it's
okay. May 3rd, 3 p.m. to 4:30, and I'll send it out with that change.
Okay. Well, it's 4:56. Any final?
Move to adjourn.
Yeah. All right. Oh, my screen just froze.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Great job, Anne, on your first time chairing. You did a great job keeping us on track, just like Sandy.
All right. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks,
bye.
See you, Rob.